Okay, let me go back to the first question. Let me reword it and see if I've got it right. You're basically asking, we look in the fossil record and we see all these animals and things that lived and died and aren't around anymore. You're saying, what would have been God's purpose for having those animals around? Yeah, but what I want to say, all of those, do you think it is possible to think that all those things are created at one moment as they are, without necessarily going through the billions of years that they might take, so that the prophecy that knowledge would be multiplied be fulfilled, so that scientists would have something to look into to have advanced knowledge, just to have that prophecy fulfilled, as it says, like in the Bible, Jesus was betrayed by Judas so that that prophecy may be fulfilled. Just to provide evidence for the prophecy.
Now, do you mean that the fossils were just created as fossils?
Yes.
And the animals never lived?
Yes. Everything created as it is, as the scientists find them now, so that the prophecy about knowledge be fulfilled and nothing more than that.
Okay.
Do you think it's feasible?
I think you get a problem if you say that there's features out there that we look at and say it looks like there's a living animal that's here and died. Because then you can say it looks like God is deceiving us by putting evidence out there that we, in studying, you know, there are things that we can be thrown off and take wrong and then go back later and realize we've made a mistake. But if there's a lot of things out there like complete skeletons of animals, fossilized in rocks and areas where hundreds of animals have died and their bones are piled together that we find and things like this in places out in Utah and such. We say these are things that these bones are not connected to any animal or anything that's ever lived in the past. God just put them there. Then what was his purpose in putting them there? I think I run into problems with that because you know, if God's putting things there from animals that never existed, then he's kind of deceiving us. And I don't see God as a deceptive God putting things out there to fool scientists or to fool people that go looking for fossil bones and things like that. The first question in there would be, well, why did he put these animals out there to exist and die before man was ever around? I think is a fair question. I can't say I have an exhaustive conclusion to it, but something that I've thought of is you're starting off with the Earth as this hot rock with a bunch of gases on it, no life whatsoever. Your final goal is to turn it into a stable temperature, nice atmosphere place where animals can live and man can live. That's your end goal. Very successfully. My analogy to that is a region of forest that has been burned out after a forest fire. Here you have an area that the earth is blackened, all life on it has been destroyed. How does that area turn itself back into a forest? It does it in stages. You get seeds which germinate only when a fire occurs that come in and start germinating, hold down the soil so it doesn't wash away. You get grasses that come in, you get shrubs that come in, you get trash trees, very short-lived softwood trees like birch and aspen that take over an area. Then gradually the hardwoods then move in. You get a whole series of different life forms coming in to reclaim this bare area and turn it back into a good hardwood forest, which is kind of the final stage of forestation of land. That's sort of my analogy for what God is doing in starting from a bare rock with no life at all. First thing you've got to get going is you've got to get the atmosphere stable, to get your CO2 under control, your oxygen in there so that other things can happen. So you start with photosynthesis, you start with very simple cells, and you get those things going, change the atmosphere, start stabilizing things. Then you move to slightly more complex plants and animals that eat off of those plants to keep everything in balance. And you work through several cycles of these animals and plants until you finally get up to stable atmosphere, the right types of soil, and the full intent of animal complexity which you'd like to have for, you know, polishing off your creation. So that's the best analogy I've been able to come up with for why we have these dinosaurs out there that lived and died, why we have these whole huge fossilized forests of plants and ferns and various types of things that we don't see now. What was God doing? Was he just experimenting, and, oh, I didn't like this, I'll go on to something else? The best meaning I can put into that is he's developing the earth as a place that is best inhabited, most habitable by man. If the animals are too big and too ferocious, and too many of them, you know, giant dinosaurs running around eating people and things, that wouldn't be very good. So it's that type of balance, I think, that he has developed over time to get where we are now.
Okay, let's move on to the question quickly about head of God.
I've done work on that. Several years ago, a fellow, a businessman in the Baltimore area named Charles Hill, wrote a work, How to Live Like a King's Kid, which was kind of an upshot of an article that had spread almost all over the country in little papers here and there, in which he claimed that as a contractor for NASA, that he was told by someone in NASA, Goddard Space Center at Greenbelt, Maryland, that their computer, which had been trying to follow the motions of the planets and the Earth and such, had been tracking it forward, backwards in time, and they had spotted a missing day in time. And he said, that's very interesting, and why don't you tell me what happened, etc. And they say, well, we found all but 40 minutes of a missing day back here, and maybe the day somewhere around Joshua's time. And he shows them the passage about a whole day missing in the Bible, about the sun standing still and such. And then they go on and they find that there are 40 minutes missing in Hezekiah's time, and he points to the passage about the sun going back 10 degrees in the Bible, Ahaz. It's an exciting story, and would be very good apologetic for Christianity. The major problem that appears is it's a hoax. Whether Harold Hill invented the hoax, or whether somebody at NASA invented the hoax, I do not know. I was suspicious of it the first time I heard it, because I heard a similar story from a pastor that I was going to his church about 10 years earlier. It had the same narrative, not just the same, you know, these times were missing in the past, had the same narrative of a Bible believer talking to an unbeliever who had found these things and getting him to read through the Bible and come up to the Joshua time, and the guy said, well, that's not quite the right amount of time. He says, read on, and he gets the Hezekiah time, and that works it out, etc. But the earlier story, which is one of Harry Rimmer's books from the 30s, which I heard from the pastor, had an astronomer from around the turn of the century at Yale, and a fellow Charles Totten, who was talking to him, was a believer. And so I was a little suspicious because the narratives were too similar in the two cases, and also because I couldn't figure out any way the computer could detect any missing days in time. The only thing I could think of that a computer might detect is being able to tell that eclipses of the sun were in the wrong place on Earth from where they ought to be. So if the Earth had been rotating, it stopped sometime in between and it had shifted the location of an eclipse somewhere. And I checked out, and we really do not have any detailed information about observations of eclipses before Joshua's time in order to be able to make a comparison between observed eclipses and calculated eclipses using a computer calculated back from the present time. So I was a little suspicious there anyway. So I got back and finally found Rimmer's book and found out that he says that this comes from a work by Charles Totten called Joshua's Long Day in the Dial of Ahaz. So I scouted around, had a hard time finding that. It was not in print at that time. It was in print at the moment, or in print a few years ago. It was not in print at that time. I finally found a copy in a library and Xeroxed it. And in that, there's no narrative. Totten claims that he had found a missing day minus 40 minutes at Joshua's time, and the other 40 minutes to make a whole day at Hezekiah's time. But he explains how he found it. And that is this, that he had an almanac put out by the British Chronological Association from all past times. It gives you all the events that have occurred since the universe was created. But these guys, the British Chronological Association, Jabez Bunting Dimbleby was ahead of it, claimed that creation started on a Monday, and they give the exact day of the year and the year. But Cotton said, well, the Bible says it started on Sunday, because the seventh day is the rest, Sabbath. The first day is Sunday. He's missing a day. And then, although he hides it as mathematics, he obviously went and looked at the 10 degrees and the dial of Ahaz passage, which probably means 10 steps on some kind of a large device rather than 10 degrees of a Babylonian 360-degree thing, and works out that the sun moves 10 degrees in 40 minutes, and so that's the 40 minutes, and then he throws the rest of it back in Joshua's time, and he gets it all to work out. But as far as I know, there's no way, with the known information at present, that will show whether those things went that way or not. I have no objection that Hezekiah... God caused a miracle at Hezekiah's time that involved the movement of a shadow. I do not know whether it was 10 degrees or not. That's an assumption. It's 10 steps is actually the term in Hebrew. And certainly the Bible says something about a striking event in Joshua's time, either the sun standing still or the sun stopping what it's doing. The term there in the Hebrew is actually sun be quiet. And whether be quiet means stop moving or whether be quiet means stop beating down on us like this, I'm not sure, and there have been different interpreters there biblically. It's something which I would like to be true, but the evidence doesn't look very good for it. And one of my main interests is Christian evidences, trying to help people think there's excellent evidence for Christianity. But one of the things that you need to do there is try to avoid using the Bayet evidence. And as best I can tell, it's the Bayet evidence. So I don't use it. And it would not recommend that you use it, although I've seen many tracks that have gone in that particular direction.
Doug, yes, I guess.